T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Good Life. I'm glad you stopped by KNSS. Don't forget, go to goodlifeguy.com. You can see what we've done in the past. And more importantly, you can see what's coming up in that next coming Saturday. So after this show is done and in the books, I'll update the website on Monday and you can see what's coming up. And I can tell you that there's some great programming coming up. Food items, wine, of course, always. And you got to keep track. It's a lot of fun. On the phone with me from New Zealand is Erica Crawford. Her and husband Kim Crawford, after leaving their namesake winery, Kim Crawford, have started Love Block. And Erica, let's talk about the philosophy of Love Block and what Kim, as the winemaker, is trying to say. I've seen a couple of cute stories about, if you buy Kim Crawford, you're getting a factory-made, decent Sauvignon Blanc. And he describes his as somewhat different. Can you relate that story?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure when he said that. But what I can tell you is that the whole philosophy here at Love Block is, firstly, I think that people need to appreciate that viticulture, i.e. the grape growing and the winemaking, are two completely different disciplines almost. And I know particularly in America, the winemaker is hailed as almost higher than God, you know. but I want to ask people just to focus for a moment what we're trying, us poor viticulturists, trying to do in the vineyard. Because that's where the real hard graft sits. You know, as we talked about before, about the challenges that we face from nature and, you know, labor. We have a massive labor problem here. But when we started Love Block, I guess it's really been my passion project in that I alluded to the fact that it's a wonderful opportunity to live your values, you know. So here we really focus on deep sustainability and heavily influenced by organic farming. So Love Block Farm as a whole is a certified organic unit where we not only grow grapes, we also have a bunch of, a very large portion of that farm, probably about 150 acres or more is certified organic grazing land, and we've just started the process of converting the animals as well. So next time Kim goes and does a dinner in Wichita, Texas, we can send some Love Block organic grass-fed beef with him for you to cook there. So that's the whole thing. So we make. I'm very insistent on the thing. I look at it as a unit, as a whole system, you know. So part of it is grapes. What do we do to help the grapes? The cows do their job. You know, they mow between the rows instead of putting a tractor across. We use the manure for some of the composting. We also have very steep hillsides, which is a fire risk in summer. So they basically graze that to keep it short because, you can't send a lawnmower across there. So there's that. We make our own composting on a farm. So we've got a large composting area and everything that comes off the farm, such as grape prunings, hay, you know, goes back onto the farm in a form of compost. Mm-hmm. So it's a closed nutrient loop. We have little things, some solar systems because we've got to catch the leachate from the composting and pump it back over. So where we can, we use solar energy. We use sheep to nibble on the weeds between the vines. On your certified organic vineyards, we don't use any chemical herbicides or pesticides. So it's really at the heart of everything you do is soil health. Because if you think about it, from there, everything grows. And if I just, you know, I do tend to ramble on and harp on about this a little bit, but I think if we don't look after our soil, then our children and their children are going to have a terrible time growing food.
Yeah.
So that's really at the heart of what we do. And, of course, then the grapes express differently. And then in the winery, the whole philosophy there is very minimal input as well. So in the winery, you know, you can do quite a lot to make those zippy Sauvignons that you usually do. But here, all the wine, whether they're certified organic or not, are made as if they are organic, which means that it's a little bit like, giving you a kitchen with six ingredients and giving your producer a kitchen with a full pantry and tell you to cook the same dish. So obviously it's quite different. The expression's going to be quite different, isn't it? So that's been quite a learning experience for both of us, both in the vineyard and in the winery. And when you taste the wine, you'll see that it's a little more, it's a lot more quiet on the nose. So it's not the usual the classic Marlborough style of jumping out of the glass with all those zippy, jubilant flavors of grapefruit and grass and stuff. So it's a lot more contemplative, and you tend to maybe get a little more peach on the nose. And then palate is more, expresses differently. Some other things that all the wines we make have about half the amount of sulfur that you would usually use. And that is also because it's made by the same minimal intervention philosophy. So I guess it's just, we don't tinker and make it look bigger in both of the aspects. So from Kim's point of view, he's really had to learn to almost sit on his hands in winemaking.
Well, you know,
so it is really, really different.
Yeah, I found the gist of what he said in an article that I read. It was those commercially produced wines are fine, but they're kind of like a teenager. You know, they're young and aggressive, and you touched on some of the aromas and flavors that New Zealand wines, Sauvignon Blanc in particular, have been notorious for. And he likens his to a more mature Sauvignon Blanc. And while you were talking, it was kind of fun because you're telling me about it and I'm sniffing and swirling and tasting. And let's talk a little bit more before we talk about other wines produced about the Sauvignon Blanc. There's some things that Kim does that make Love Block a little bit different, certainly when we come to this Sauvignon Blanc. And this one, by the way, is the 2017. I have a tech sheet for 2018, but I imagine it's similar. A couple things. There's no new oak, but there was a little bit of oak, mature oak, involved in the production. But I was kind of surprised that malolactic fermentation was not only allowed to take place in barrel, but also in some tank. And then I put the wine in my mouth and discovered why that was so good, because taming the acidity and, oh, my goodness. Talk a little about the 2017, and you don't have to go into technical detail, but this wine is really a beauty.
So 17 was a little bit of a challenging vintage, which we spoke about Mother Nature before. And so this is really when you speak about Kim. I always think, as people in the vineyard, people say that good wine is made in the vineyard, and winemakers say it's made in the winery. But in the difficult vintages, it's really the winemaker that has to stand up and tinker. And in this case, that was definitely so. So it went into, as is what we call neutral oak, to shave off some of those edges and the malolactic. So on your nose, for me, it's this canned peach. I don't know if you get that as you're sniffing it.
Oh, man. I tell everybody, when you put wine in your mouth, try not to swallow it right away. And I know that's a challenge. But if you hold it there, you get to feel the acidity and you get more of that lingering aftertaste and you get everything the bottle has to offer. Man.
And the funny thing is, Guy, what we forget is that wine is a living thing. And I haven't tasted that 17 for a little while until I was in the U.S., in Canada, actually, May. And how the wine has changed from, last year, say, December, to now is just amazing. And it's just gets better in the bottle. So the other thing I want to also implore your listeners, if you see a Sauvignon Blanc that's not current vintage, that's maybe 3 or 4 years old, don't be scared, because it really does develop in the bottle. And I think that that one in particular has just grown nice soft edges, and also sort of, I don't know if the pineapple is still lingering in the flavor profile there, but it's definitely a wine that you can sit and drink on the patio, and it's not going to clobber food over.
No, in fact, but it would go, it'd be great. Well, oh man, I just picture a big pot of, okay, it would take a bottle of wine for the cooking process here, but garlic, wine, lemon, and some fresh mussels and steamed in that, and then enjoying a glass of Sauvignon Blanc with Pen Cove mussels, a local West Coast.
Yeah,
mussel.
And you know, it's summertime, and for me, I'm one of my big loves is champagne, but nothing pairs with oysters like New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. And I think, you know, give it a try this summer. Yeah. I know you guys are. Yep. You guys are fully into the summer. So, but I also want to tell you, I think that Sauvignon Blanc is the most versatile of white wines, because it's got enough acidity and enough flavor to carry big flavors in food, as you're going to have at the restaurant that Kim's doing the pairing.
Yeah.
But it can also be by itself or be with simple things like an oyster. So it's a really versatile wine, and it can be, you know. It, for me, it's a workhorse in the kitchen.
Yeah, the aromatics are not as overt in your face as early Sauvignon Blancs that we got from New Zealand. But
that's right, yeah. That's right, yeah.
They're still beautiful. Let's talk about some other wines that you produce. And I know that you probably get you have a hat that says VP of Sales. Do you know off the top of your head what wines we have available here in the States?
Yeah, you have Sauvignon Blanc available. You have Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir.
Okay, so we don't have the sparkling Moscato, the Brut that you make, and we don't have Chenin Blanc yet. Any chance of getting those in the future?
I think I'd like to think so. You know, I think that we've been going for 5 years now, so. We make another exciting one that I do want to tell you about that I think we are going to take in. It's called not a full natural wine, but no preservative added. So instead of adding, you know, sulfurous preservative pre-ferment and post-ferment, we use green tea as a natural antioxidant. And that's a really exciting wine if you're really into exploring different things.
Wow.
So whilst I've been tasting it for 5 days, same time every day. And while the wine goes orange, it doesn't actually oxidize in the natural, in the traditional way that you think of, you know, oxidized wine. If you open an old bottle of under cork, sometimes they just taste like sherry. So it doesn't do that because of the green tea. But it just has flavors, you know, different flavors. Obviously, you know, natural wine's always a bit funky, but cumin and clove and saffron, so all these different things coming out. So we're hoping to take some of that wine to the US in September, but that's a real exploratory journey for anybody who's into something different.
Well, let's talk briefly about Pinot Gris, because for me, I like Pinot Gris from anywhere, and sometimes I think I like cooler climate Pinot Gris than others, coastal Pinot Gris and the like. Obviously, your Pinot Gris is probably fitting into a cooler climate style. I look forward to having that at the dinner at Scotch and Sirloin next week. Tell us a little bit about Pinot Gris from your perspective.
So Pinot Gris, we've been making that in New Zealand probably for about 15 years now. And as a whole, we all struggled a little bit with the alcohol and the sugar. And I'll tell you why. Because to get those lovely Pinot Gris flavors, you've got to get to high sugar levels. But then if you have high sugar levels, of course, you have high alcohol as it ferments into alcohol. So that's the tightrope that you walk with Pinot Gris. So what we're finding with organic grapes and vines under stress, really, is that you get to physiological ripeness. In other words, on the palate, that the flavors are ripe on the palate before they reach the high sugar levels. So we can make a dry-style Pinot Gris with manageable alcohols. And then, of course, I think that it sits somewhere between Alsace and Pinot Grigio.
Ah, interesting.
So it's got the it's got the flavor that Pinot Grigio perhaps doesn't have, but it's got the mouthfeel and complexity that Alsace has. So, you know, that varietal is very fast growing here in New Zealand and Australia. So I think it's just absolutely fabulous with food, and it's got delicate flavors. And it's kind of, I guess, the perennial princess, you know, because it's not big and punchy. Yeah. But it really supports food wonderfully.
Well, you know, and speaking of food, while we're tasting and talking, or I am tasting and you're talking, I'm looking at the menu, and on the menu at Scotch and Sirloin next Wednesday evening, the first course is Love Block Sauvignon Blanc 2018. There's two things to enjoy with this: a minced beef pie, which that'll be interesting, but what I'm really looking forward is pan-seared scallops with an avocado sauce, avocado pembre, and I think that will just make the Sauvignon Blanc pop.
Yes, I did look at that, and my mouth was watering, you know, yeah. And I think with the lovely texture that the avocado adds, Sauvignon Blanc will just lift the... What I find is it just lifts the sweetness in fruit, and sometimes the fruit and the wine. And I also want to say, Sauvignon Blanc is the only grape, in my humble opinion, that you can drink with lettuce leaves. You know how people always order salad and wine, and invariably the lettuce leaves make the wine bitter. Don't know if you've tasted that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was same thing with asparagus, but I do my asparagus on the grill, which brings to fore some of the sugars from the vegetable, and it works quite well with wine.
Yes.
The main course, or half the main course, is pan-fried red snapper with a smoked fish cake and tomato salsa. That's going to go with the Pinot Grigio. And
I think fabulously.
Yeah. But I really like what the chef has done for the 2018 Love Block Pinot Noir. Center-cut seared ribeye, yes. Mushroom ragu, and parsnip mashed potatoes. So many things there I think will work well with Pinot.
I think that this, and I suppose in the red wines, I'm not a big red wine drinker. I must make a confession here, but I think, again, Pinot Noir is so versatile because you can drink it with anything from fishy fish right through to that big steak you're just talking about. So I think that's just a classic pairing. But I always use a bit of lemon on my steak because when you have a wine like Pinot Noir, that's perhaps not as robust as a Cabernet or something with steak. It just ties the acidity of the wine into the steak. And I put lemon on everything virtually on my plate. So give that a try maybe on Thursday night.
I will do that. I've not done that myself, but I have to give it a go. Well, I'll tell you, I wish you were going to be here. I'm so glad that Kim is. I look forward to seeing him and see if he has any recollection of our time spent together in Aspen years ago. I always like sharing that story. And Erica, I'll tell you that we had an 11-and-a-half-day trip to New Zealand in October, and we were all booked up and ready to go, and I was taking eight other people, and two different couples had to back out, and the increase in cost that caused through my travel agent, we had to nix the trip. But
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too. We're gonna do it. But not this year.
I just have to tell you where I'm sitting at the moment. I'm sitting in Queenstown, looking out the window over the lake, snow-capped mountains. And I'm here. Yesterday, we had a viticulture day. And with my travel companion is my 92-year-old mother-in-law. And she has not been here since 1974. So we're really having a good look around and enjoying the beauty of New Zealand. It is an extraordinary country.
Well, I really now feel like I owe you a debt of gratitude for me interrupting your time with the mom early in the morning on a Saturday.
It's too early to be up for her, so it's a good time. It was my pleasure talking to you, and I hope you enjoy the dinner with him. I know he's been looking forward to being in Kansas.
It'll be
fun. He likes the Midwest.
Good. Well, thank you so much for your time. I hope our paths cross again soon so that we can sit face to face and enjoy some wines from Love Block.
I'll make a point. Thank you, Guy.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
I'm Guy Barrett. It's a good life. We'll take another quick break. Come back. I got a couple other notes to finish up with, and I'm so glad you stayed with us if you've been with us for the whole show. Again, the Scotch and Sirloin dinner still has a few seats open, but you better call now. The dinner is Wednesday, June 19th, 6:30. You'll get to meet Kim Crawford. That's Erica's husband. And you'll get to try that great menu that we've been talking about, as well as some of the fine wines from Love Block, Kim Crawford's new label. You get to give them a call at 685-8701. It's area code 316. We'll be right back for a few quick notes before we say goodbye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.